It's Wednesday, June 1st. Welcome to Market Forward. I'm Chris Hill. Joining me in studio today from Motley Fool Funds, Bill Barker. Happy June.
Why, thank you.
The haters who said sell in May and go away, it didn't work out for them.
We don't know yet.
Well, for May, it didn't work.
Well, they could have sold at the end of May.
Possibly.
Now, having gone away, they're going to check back in September.
It's just a bad idea.
And if they had done that, they'd be happy today because the stock market's down a little bit.
All right, let's
move. You've issued there.
Let's just move on.
All right.
Let's just move on to actual news. Lest any of our listeners think, oh, my God, they're not going to do another buy, sell, or hold, are they? No, we're not. We're going to get to the news. We've got some...
Never again.
I don't want to say never again. We might do it again. You know what? We'll get to that. But first, let's get to... There's a bunch of retail news, and we'll start with Michael Kors. Please help me understand what is going on, because shares of Michael Kors are up 7% on a fourth quarter that seems nothing more than just fine. Sales were up 11%. Same-store sales were barely in the positive range. This was, I don't know, is this one of those situations where Michael Kors is, the expectations are so low that anything remotely positive is going to get a 7% pop?
More or less, supplemented by the announcement of a share buyback. And so this was a rapidly growing company, not just a rapidly growing stock, but a rapidly growing company throwing up sort of 60% revenue growth for 3 or 4 years there on the back of a 2011 IPO at a little about $20 a share, which got up to $90, some almost $100 a share by 2013 and 2014, I guess it topped out, which I understand based on 60% compounded revenue growth, but it was growing that by issuing shares. It wasn't all doing that out of cash flow by any means. And also, it's a fashion retailer, which is going to have hits and misses. So after a few years of being on the right side of the fashion trends, that sort of peaked and topped out, and the stock got all the way back down to the mid-30s early this year. So it bounced around, had a good quarter that it announced at the beginning of the year, and which reversed the trend of some same-store sales losses. And now it's had another quarter that's sort of back in that category, and it's still bouncing around sort of the low range of where it's been over the last 3 or 4 years. So if you're just looking at the stock price today, you say, this doesn't look all that good, doesn't look like it justifies this kind of a stock move, but the stock move is a bounce off of lows.
So is this still, even with this little pop today, is this still a cheap stock?
Well, it's trading about 10 times earnings, and it is maybe a confusing stock for those that look at stocks through the lens of, is this growth, is this value? This was obviously a growth stock, and now it is pulling the reins in on its growth. It's going to take, it says, $1 billion and buy back shares. And if you're looking at the capital allocation, then you don't mind the fact that it sold stock that it grew on the base in part of a high stock price and issuing shares from the 2011 to 2014 years when the stock price was strong, and that now it is buying back some of those shares. That's not necessarily poor capital allocation, but what is this? Is this a stock that you're looking to for compounded sustained growth? I don't know. At the moment, it is growing a little bit, but it's been brought down along with just about everybody else in the retail space, of course. The stock, even having had a good quarter 3 months ago to report and moving up on that, everybody has imputed all the results of retail at large to this company as well. And the stock came back down, and now good day, back up a little bit.
All right, let's move on to Land's End, another apparel retailer. And I think I have the same question, which is essentially, what am I missing here? Because the stock is basically flat today, maybe down 0.5%. This was a terrible quarter. they posted a pretty big loss when a slight gain was expected. Same store sales were down more than 7%. How is this, or is, you know, is this kind of like the same basic situation with Michael Kors, where, gosh, you know, we're not really expecting anything out of Land's End, and not really anything is what we got.
Land's End is a really more difficult story to predict at the moment. First of all, it's been spun out from Sears, and that is a weight that you don't want to have around yourself. Coming out of Sears and still having a lot of your product moved through stores in Sears, because I think, as you were commenting to me the other day,
yeah,
Sears, not overly contaminated with customers.
Right. Yeah.
This was your experience.
That was, yeah, I mentioned this on the podcast yesterday. I went all the way through a Sears in Western Maryland, and there was not a single person, other than me, there was not a single person in that Sears who was not employed by Sears.
Yeah, were they shopping there?
Maybe their bosses were encouraging them to poke around, because certainly if you're over in the appliance section, you've got plenty of time. You don't have any customers to deal with. Sure, walk on over to Sporting Goods.
You may want to bump up the employee discount to sort of generate some same-store sales.
It might.
If those are your customers or your only potential customers.
So are you saying Land's End was such a flawed business that even Sears was like, look, we don't want you. We don't want your stink on us.
I don't know if it was that or if it was just, we've got so many other problems, why don't we just spin this out and then they can figure out what to do without us. But Land's End has made a lot of big changes and seems to be moving out of the lumber sexual category.
Is that a word?
Apparently it's a word, and I have brought it out today because I learned it in preparation for this.
Did Jim Gillies dare you to use this word on the podcast?
No, it's a perfectly cromulent word.
Okay.
Look it up. Google that.
I'll Google that while you're talking.
And I learned it in looking at whether there is any difference between Land's End and L.L. Bean, which, from my mind, there is no difference between the two of them.
Wow. You just totally threw down the gauntlet for a lot of people in my home state of Maine.
Well, go ahead. Pick up that gauntlet if you have the guts.
For one thing, L.L. Bean, first of all, these are businesses that are—
Serve the lumber sexual.
Okay, so in terms of customer base, I'm sure there's some overlap there. They are based on other opposite sides of the country. Although Land's End isn't based in California, but it takes its inspiration, takes the name from Land's End, California, which is gorgeous. Went there last summer. But the other thing is that we've just spent a few minutes talking about how flawed the Land's End business is, and L.L. Bean routinely makes the list that comes up every now and then of private companies that people wish were public so that they could own a share of it. L.L. Bean is known for phenomenal customer service, the classic example being the L.L. Bean boots, which once you buy a pair of Bean boots, they're yours for life. And you can. I've had a pair for 30 years, and if tomorrow I decided I'm going to send these back because they need repairing, they'll get repaired for free, no questions asked.
I know. It's a whole, like, religion thing, isn't it?
No, it's just
L.L. Bean worship. And I come from a reasonably preppy background and learned that some of my friends would make road trips from their northeastern colleges to L.L. Bean to go to the flagship store, which I thought was bizarre. But within the realm of, I guess, upping your level of preppiness above everybody else's, if that was your thing.
Yes. So the store that you're referring to is in Freeport, Maine, and it never closes. There are actually, I believe there are no locks on the doors because the store is always open.
So it's like Mecca for preppies.
I think so, yeah.
Do you have to take the Hajj up to Freeport to see, you know, where it all started?
I'm assuming that when you checked into your dorm your first day at Yale, you were handed a bunch of L.L. Bean stuff.
No.
No? That's not how they roll at Yale?
I, I actually wasn't given a real bed my first day at Yale, but that's another story.
Oh, we'll save that for another time.
Probably not. So anyway, Land's End is suffering from a number of things. One, the general retail landscape, which is not good. Two, it's basically a catalog-based business to a large extent, and the catalog business is largely over. So they have gravitated, as everybody in that space has had to, toward the internet, but they don't have a particularly better presence there than everybody else. And the legacy catalog stuff is really not helping. I think Victoria's Secret is getting rid of their catalog business entirely. We talked about that recently. And also, they've got a new CEO in who is going to take this company to a more fashionable place and has done so. And so if you go to the Land's End website, you'll find the women's shoes. Now you can get high-heeled shoes from Land's End, which just, as I say, doesn't seem like, to the degree that I have any knowledge of fashion, and I don't, that's just not what their core business had been. Because I think of them as operating in very much the same space as L.L. Bean, which I don't think is selling high-heeled shoes. Anyway, that is where this new CEO, who's comes from the Dolce & Gabbana and that background, wants to see Land's End go, and it has not yet taken.
Not a lot of lumberjacks wearing high heels, I'm guessing.
I don't know exactly. Apparently, so the lumbersexual style is, I guess, this is the evolution of the metrosexual, perhaps, to put on a plaid shirt and have a beard, but keep it reasonably tidy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think
good look for you?
A good plaid shirt, and you're halfway there.
Well, I think you still got to have more of some tidiness to where you're going with the plaid shirt. You can't just have it untucked and, you know. That's not enough to be a lumbersexual.
Right.
Then you could just be a lumberjack.
Right.
Right.
I feel like I could pull off the lumberjack thing for maybe a day or so, and then my arms would get tired.
Yeah. Carrying the axe is optional.
Right. Sticking with retail but moving to sporting apparel, a couple of things happening that appear to be related in at least one way, and that's with Under Armour and Nike. Under Armour issued a warning, and it has to do with the bankruptcy, and we talked about this recently, with Sports Authority. And with it, without getting too in the weeds, Under Armour had to come out and say, oh, that $163 million in revenue we were planning on recognizing from Sports Authority, because Sports Authority locations sell a decent amount of Under Armour stuff, yeah, we're only going to be able to recognize about a quarter of that. So obviously that's hitting the stock a little bit today. Nike's is more, I suppose, in the eye of the beholder, and in this case the beholder is Morgan Stanley, which downgraded Nike's shares on an analyst note which cited increased competition, which I have to believe Under Armour is at least in some small way a part of that competition, although Adidas has come on pretty strong over the last year or two as well. When you look at the sports apparel landscape, what do you make of all this?
Well, Under Armour, as you note, has got to face the reality that Sports Authority is not just going to be operating in bankruptcy, but is actually liquidating. And so there was the $143 million expected, whatever, for
the year. It was $163.
$163 taken down to $23. So that's $140 million of sales for this year out. And so Sports Authority will not try to reorganize within the protection of bankruptcy, but is just liquidating. And they, last time they had addressed this, said that they expected Sports Authority to still be a going concern and to make up some sales elsewhere. They still expect to make up some sales elsewhere. That is, not all that Sports Authority purchasing is just gone. It's not evaporated. It will transition to other places. However, they're not going to make nearly $140 million, $160 million, whatever, through those other channels this year. Though this is really should be looked at as a one-time event. That is, people are going to get their sports gear and shoes from different places, and in the short term, this is definitely a hit for Under Armour. But they gave some guidance that their total sales for the year is still expected in the mid to high 20%. So still an exceptional growth story for Under Armour, but a little bit of a hit definitely in the short term. And as you say, they are one of the competitors that the analysts are seeing affecting Nike. Now, Nike's also affected by sports authorities closing, and in an absolute dollar amount, more so than Under Armour, probably, by about 2x. And that's not as big a problem for Nike because they're a much, much bigger company. They're much, much more international company.
Right. On a percentage of sales, it's not as big.
Less than 1% of the total sales for Nike. So they are still enough bigger than Under Armour that they can have this affect them on an absolute basis more than Under Armour, but on a percentage basis far less. But the other thing that's affecting them, as you note, is Adidas is beginning to get its footwear act together again after a number of missteps over the past few years, and Under Armour really is doing very well, especially with Steph Curry's successes this year and the popularity of his shoe.
Yeah, no, they've definitely come on in the shoe department, and I'm sure they were very pleased to see the Golden State Warriors advance to the NBA Finals, because that's just another week of
free advertising.
Yeah.
2 weeks, perhaps. I don't know.
They drag this stuff on
if the series goes seven games, which I hope almost everybody is hoping for, a great series that involves both teams playing well and a long and close series.
I'm going to go on a limb and guess that at least some people in Cleveland, and certainly our friend Greg Haygood, who you work with, proud son of Cleveland, I'm sure they're not hoping for that. I'm sure they're hoping for Cleveland to just walk over Golden State in four straight games.
Cleveland can hope for that all at once. I think that is a tall order.
Yeah, that's what they want.
But they'll settle for a close seven game series and a win in any version that they can find.
And you know what, Cleveland, they could use that.
Yeah,
they could use a world championship of some sort.
They really could.
Before we wrap up, last time we were in the studio, we did our round of buy, sell, or hold. And immediately we got responses from listeners in our Facebook group, which you can join just by going on Facebook and search for Motley Fool Podcast. And listeners immediately, I don't want to say leaping to your defense, but leaping to your side with the comments that you made about cricket, basically saying Bill Barker 100% right about cricket and the efforts that have been made to speed up the game of cricket. So kudos to you for that.
I wasn't saying anything controversial. I was just citing facts.
I also got a couple of shout-outs for my very quick sell rating that I put on Rafael Nadal winning the French Open, because I think it was about 24 hours after we recorded the podcast that Nadal had held a press conference and said, I'm not playing. What, is he injured?
He's injured, yeah. He's got a wrist injury.
Yeah. He's...
You taking a victory lap for that?
No, I was going to say
he's a poor man with a hurt wrist.
Yes,
he can't.
This poor multi-million dollar
can't
athlete
compete in the sport that he loves, and all the fans who have been deprived of getting to see him try to regain the title.
Yeah,
but it was a good call.
It was a good call. So that's
so I'm gonna, take your victory
I'm
lap.
I'm going to take that small victory lap, and a lot of nice comments from listeners through email and on Twitter. And in the Facebook group support and saying this was, you know, that they enjoyed it. But lest anyone think that it was all sunshine and rainbows, we did get a few people saying, I didn't love this. A couple of comments on Twitter from Nate Purdom. I enjoyed the shout out for being the lone listener to sit through the entire buy, sell, or hold episode. And from Tom Rooney, the awful truth is I fell asleep about 22 minutes in. In my defense, I was tired. Also, in your defense, Tom, we went on longer than we should have. So,
what was kind of it was the Chris Hill show with Bill Barker as a guest.
It was
rather than the Market Foolery.
You know what? Next time, that's it. Next time, we'll make it much more about you.
No. I'm not saying I had equal billing, but it wasn't as much Market Foolery as you know.
Oh yeah, no.
The two of us doing something.
Right.
And so, if you had tuned in for Market Foolery, all you got was the two of us doing something.
Exactly. and I read those comments from Nate and Tom. There were other a couple of email from people saying, "Yeah, this is, I've been listening for a few months, and I actually like it when you guys talk about business news. I'm not interested in this."
In your guys' opinions about random things.
I don't really care about your stupid game. I'll be back when you're, you know, I'll be back. Look forward to the next episode where you're actually talking about business news, but I'm not playing your game. Friday, June 3rd, the day that we've been waiting for, National Donut Day. How will you be celebrating?
Apparently, I'll be eating donuts. It's the kind of thing, as you know, it's a little hard to keep up with all the national days out there.
Yes.
We've discussed many of them.
Yes.
National Coffee Day, Coffee Cake Day, we discussed.
Yep.
National Hot Dog Day, I think we've done. National Cat Day, various others. And so donuts seems like a pretty easy one to know how to celebrate.
It really does. And
with the Dunkin' Donuts so close by us now.
Right.
Although not necessarily your favorite donut shop.
I will always have a special place in my carotid artery for my clogged artery.
But if you had donuts to have just one donut.
So I was
Sugar Shack is really.
Sugar Shack is phenomenal. I was in Ohio over the weekend.
You gotta pay a little bit more for those Sugar Shack donuts.
And they're worth it.
Yeah.
They're totally worth it. I was in Zanesville, Ohio. There's an historic place in Zanesville called Donald's Donuts. And it's been around for, I think, about 50 years or so. And it was the last thing I did before leaving Zanesville was I went in the afternoon, got some coffee, good coffee, by the way, and got just the classic glazed donut. Holy cow, that thing just melted in my mouth. It was amazing. So that's I think for National Donut Day, I don't want to take anything away from Dunkin' Donuts. Love Dunkin' Donuts. But I think if you're ever going to go to a local shop, some sort of local donut purveyor, Friday's the day to do it.
You know where you should go? Beeler's Donuts in Reading Terminal Market. Did I send you to Reading Terminal when you went to Philadelphia too long ago?
You sent me to Reading Terminal. I don't think you didn't.
You
mention,
didn't go to the donuts. This,
no.
This is sort of a newer thing that since I left Philadelphia had popped up, and I think I sent you to the Amish counter, I hope.
You did, yes, and it was great.
Good food there. At the Amish counter. And Beeler's is also run by the fine Amish people who have a lot of the stalls in Reading Terminal, and it's just donuts, and I hear it's amazing.
If you're not actually in Reading Terminal Market, however, because you did point me there, but our colleague Greg Martz pointed me to Federal Donuts in Philadelphia, and I did make it to Federal, and oh boy.
It's a good donut town.
Philly is a good donut town. It doesn't get enough credit for that.
It's not known for its healthy eating, Philadelphia.
It's known for the cheesesteak, and it's known for the whole Freedom Hall and Independence Hall thing.
Birthplace of democracy, yeah.
Ben Franklin, but not so much for the donuts.
But if people go to Beeler's, they'll be happy. That is a way to spend all of Friday.
And isn't that all we're trying to do?
Which I think you have to stand in a long line. So take a good chunk of your Friday to wait for especially this Friday.
I thought you were going to say take something to read.
Everybody's got their phone now. Okay. They're just staring at their phone while they're in line. Don't act like you don't.
Hey, man, if there are good donuts at the end of that line, I'm there. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
As always, people on the program may have interest in the stocks they talk about, and the Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against. So don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. That's going to do it for this edition of Market Foolery. The show is mixed by Dan Boyd. I'm Chris Hill. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.